The Lord be with you.
We
pledge allegiance to a part, but Jesus pledges his life to make us whole. And to explain what I mean by that, I want to start off with something of a joke. There's a famous writer and radio commentator called Garrison Keillor, who was born in Anoka, Minnesota, and he was once asked if one of his neighbors there was a Lutheran, and he said, "Of course she's a Lutheran. Everyone here is a Lutheran, even the Catholics." And that's because in Minnesota, 1 in 5 people is a Lutheran. I say this because Minnesota has been in the news a lot lately, and also because our gospel reading today begins when Jesus hears that John the Baptist has been arrested. And if you've been listening to the news, what you hear from Minnesota is that 3,000 Immigrations and Custom Enforcement Officers, known as ICE, have been deployed to the Twin Cities area. That's 5 times the number of local police officers. You've also likely heard about the 2 killings of U.S. citizens by ICE officers. And you've also probably heard about the massive protests that are taking place there. But here's the thing. If you are a Lutheran, or at least have been for some time, odds are you know someone in the Minnesota area. You probably have friends or family there. I have both. And what I have heard from them is, compared to what you hear on the news, things are worse. ICE is supposed to be there to deport the worst of the worst, criminals who've entered into our country illegally and are harming folks. And yet the folks I've talked to have shared that they simply feel intimidated as a whole. And these aren't just random people telling me this. Some of you may remember a former pastor here at Faith Lutheran, Pastor Brent Campbell. I got a picture of him. He lives in that same Anoka, Minnesota, that's just 1/2 hour from the Twin Cities. And this past week, he shared with me a few things. He shared with me that his 2 daughters live right in the heart of the Twin Cities, and his 5-year-old grandson goes to sleep with the sound of helicopters flying overhead and a flashbang going off a few blocks away. His family shared that there was a family of 6 trying to get home, driving in their minivan when they got stuck between ICE and protesters, and an ICE agent threw a tear gas canister under their minivan. And when the tear gas canister exploded, it shattered all the windows in the minivan, set off all the airbags, and tear gas began to overwhelm their 6-month-old child. Now, fortunately, neighbors came out of their house, brought the family into their home, and gave CPR to the child, and he was okay. Pastor Brent also shares that his daughters have 2 friends, both of whom are U.S. citizens, who were protesting peacefully, and they were arrested and detained and abused by ICE for 9 hours. Those are his words. Now, when I hear all these things happening, I look to Jesus to see what he does when he hears that his friend and colleague, John the Baptist, has been arrested. And I tell you, I give a big sigh of relief, because what Jesus does when John is arrested is he withdraws to Galilee. And withdrawing to my hometown is exactly what I want to do right now. I want to stand up here on Sunday morning and I want to preach you stories about my personal sin that make you laugh and trust in God's grace for you. And throughout history, in times of conflict, people have retreated to their corners to find voices that make them feel comfortable and safe, that tell them what they want to hear. We read about this even in the Church of Corinth 2,000 years ago, where Paul says that he hears folks are saying, "Oh, you know, I belong to Paul, who founded the church." And some others say, "Oh, I belong to Apollos, who's the preacher who came after Paul." And some say, "I belong to Cephas," which is the Aramaic version of the name Peter, the denominational bigwig down in Jerusalem. And some even say, "Oh, I belong to Jesus, because obviously Jesus sides with me and not with you." And by doing that, the people in the church in Corinth are saying, "I don't have to belong to everyone in this church. I only have to belong to the people who are part of my group, who agree with me. And friends, if that's what Jesus is doing by withdrawing to Galilee, he does it in a very strange way, because John the Baptist was arrested by Herod Antipas, and John was arrested in the south of Israel by the Red Sea, the River Jordan. I made a blue B by where historians think John the Baptist was baptizing, and you'll notice it's in kind of a lighter color on that map, because that lighter color is the territory controlled by Herod Antipas. Jesus withdraws from that letter B to the letter N, which is where Nazareth is, and you may notice that territory is the same color because it's also controlled by Herod Antipas. In all of Israel that Jesus could have withdrawn to, he withdraws to the territory that's controlled by the same guy who arrested John. And then it says he moves, if you can bring the map back up, actually. Then it says he moves from Nazareth, where that N is, to Capernaum. And I drew a green sea. It's just on sort of the north shore of the Sea of Galilee. He moves to Capernaum, which is kind of an odd thing if you're trying to avoid attention, because whereas Nazareth is sort of a sleepy backwater town, Capernaum, it's not much larger, but it's along what's known as the Way of the Sea or the Road by the Sea, a major road for international trade. Jesus has moved to a town with interstate access because he's about to go global. And then if Jesus is trying to withdraw and avoid attention to himself, he makes a really odd choice because he starts to proclaim, "Repent, for the kingdom of heaven has come near," which is the exact thing we see John the Baptist proclaim in Matthew 3, verse 2, in his own ministry before he gets arrested. It's almost like Jesus wants people to pay more attention to him, especially since then he goes around and he starts recruiting people to his cause, starting with fishermen. This past week, there was a call that went forth from religious leaders in the Twin Cities. They asked clergy from all over the country to come and join them, and about 600 pastors, priests, rabbis, and imam came and joined them, at least a dozen of which are personal friends and colleagues of mine. And one of the things these pastors did is they held a protest at the Minneapolis airport. This is something they got permits to do. They coordinated with the police. And the reason they were doing this is because airlines are part of deporting folks from Minneapolis and the Twin Cities area down to holding facilities in other parts of the country where they are far from family and legal counsel who might support them through their due process. And so the pastors went to say, please stop doing this. Now, many more people than their permit allowed showed up to the protest. And the pastors also made a decision. They made a decision to line up, if we can get that picture back, actually. They made a decision to line up outside of the permitted protesting area in a way that would impede the normal functioning of the airport. They knew this was illegal. They knew they would get arrested for doing it. And so they knelt in prayer, and as they were handcuffed, they said the Lord's Prayer. And I want to be clear, the officers who arrested them, they weren't ICE agents. These were local police officers, and they acted very professionally. They did their job in accordance with the law, which is to clear these people who were impeding the working of the airport. And within a couple hours, all the clergy had been released. And I'll admit, when I first heard that pastors were doing this, at least one of whom is a friend of mine, I thought to myself, what in the world are they doing? These airlines, they're just taking a job, right? Their client happens to be the federal government, but an airline's responsibility is to make money because they belong to their shareholders and they belong to their employees, and they got to make sure those folks get paid. And these pastors aren't only interrupting that, they're interrupting all the other folks who want to hop on a plane and go see their families to whom they belong. And I realized the same thing could be said of Jesus when he calls the fishermen. Because when Jesus calls the fishermen, he doesn't just call them to change careers. He calls them away from their economic livelihood. He calls them away from their hometowns, and he calls them away from their families. In the ancient world, who you belonged to more than anyone else was your family. The commandment to honor your father and your mother means to care for them in their old age. Jesus, how can James and John care for their father Zebedee if they abandon the family business and leave their father behind? And yet Jesus knows the alternative is to leave them in a world where each person says, I belong only to myself. I belong only to my own family. To live in a world in which Herod and Caesar decide how we have relationships with one another. And what Jesus has seen in the arrest of John the Baptist is that world doesn't work. And so it's not just what Jesus is calling his disciples away from. It's what he is calling them to. He calls them away from becoming fishermen with their nets to bind fish together, and to being fishers of people, to bind people together in nets of love and care. Which is why Jesus goes forth with them, not just teaching and proclaiming about the kingdom of heaven in opposition to the kingdom of Herod Antipas. Jesus lives out what that kingdom looks like by healing the sick and curing every illness in the communities around him. Because the kingdom of heaven looks like people taking care of each other. The pastors who called other clergy to come and join them, they weren't just calling for an end to some things. They are calling their congregations and their colleagues and corporations to care for other people in this community. I hear of Lutherans who are making sure they can do everything possible to support immigrant-owned restaurants who right now have had a business decline not seen since the pandemic. Pastor Brent says his own congregation is making food deliveries to immigrants who are scared to leave their house even to buy groceries. They're also organizing volunteers who will walk with Latino children to and from their school because the kids are scared to go to school right now. And I want to be clear, most of the people for whom Lutherans are doing this ministry are not themselves Lutheran. They may not even be Christian. But when Jesus calls his disciples to leave their fishing nets and bind people together in networks of love, he doesn't just call them to do it for Jews in Galilee. If we read the next two, our lectionary ends at verse 23, but if you read verses 24 and 25, it says, so his fame spread throughout all Syria, and they brought to him all the sick and those who were afflicted with various diseases and pains, people possessed by demons or having epilepsy or afflicted with paralysis, and he cured them. And great crowds followed him from the Galilee, from the Decapolis, from Jerusalem, Judea, and from beyond the Jordan. I've got a map that shows you some of these areas. Syria is up to the north. Decapolis is 10 Greek cities that are in that blue section, and across the Jordan is everything to the east of Israel. These are places that are Gentile. Jews are not the primary community there, and yet Jesus is ministering to them. And this is why Matthew says that Jesus is fulfilling the prophecy that Isaiah said for this region of Zebulun and Naphtali, which were the regions around the Sea of Galilee. There were the tribes in the north of Israel who 700 years before Jesus were brutally conquered by the Assyrian Empire. And the Assyrians knew that if people live in the land of their ancestors, they will fight for it. And so what Assyrians would do is when they conquered a place, they would deport all the folks who lived there to a different part of the empire and swap them from foreigners from another part of the empire. When we hear about the lost tribes of Israel, this is what it's talking about. And yet Isaiah says, in this place that has been most devastated by foreigners, God will create a light to shine even for those foreign nations. And that's what Jesus does. We pledge our allegiance to a job or to a family or to a place, but Jesus pledges his whole life to make us whole. And what that means is ending every division in the body of Christ, who are his people in every job, in every family, and in every place. This past week, another story I heard about were two women who were arrested by ICE agents, and their names were Tippy and Heather. And as they were in the back of the car, the SUV in which they were detained, they noticed that the ICE agent in the front passenger side said that he wasn't feeling well. And then a little while later, he began to tip over, and his arms started spasming, and his words started to become incoherent. And the women in the back who were arrested said, "You gotta stop and pull over 911, but the other's officers ignored them, and they kept insisting, "You have to stop and call 911, until eventually the SUV did stop. And at that point, it became very clear that the man was having a seizure, and his tongue and his fluids had blocked his airway. He had stopped breathing. And so one of the women, who was a kindergarten teacher and trained in CPR, asked to be uncuffed. And when she was uncuffed, she ran immediately to the front and cradled the officer's head to open his airway and hold him as he went through three more seizures until at last an ambulance could come and take care of him. This woman saved the life of the man who had arrested her. Lutherans, we only have one celebrity pastor. Her name is Nadia Boltz-Weber, and she's got a great line. She says, every time we draw a line between us and others, Jesus is on the other side of that line. Look, I don't know if the women in the back of that SUV were Lutherans, but as Garrison Keillor says, everyone around there is a Lutheran. They sure acted like Lutherans in that moment. Because the same reason they were out protesting was they cared about people who were strangers. And what that meant was when the person who arrested them was in trouble, they cared about that person too, because they weren't there to pick a team or to pick a side or to pick a part. They were there to follow the Christ who has committed his life to make us whole. Jesus will withdraw three more times in Matthew's gospel. Each time he withdraws, it is because there is some threat of violence, and I've got him listed here. Either threats from the religious leaders who are vowing to destroy him, or because John the Baptist is being beheaded, or because he has more conflict with religious leaders. And every time it says that Jesus withdraws from these threats of violence, Jesus' response is commit himself more fully to living for others. He commits himself to nonviolence. When John is beheaded, he commits himself to feeding the 5,000. When he has conflict with the religious leaders, he goes to another country and heals the daughter of the Canaanite woman, until at last, when he is arrested himself, he commits himself to going to the cross so that on the cross he can claim each and every one of us as his children, as his family, as part of his kingdom. Friends, you will continue to hear of people being arrested. You will continue to hear of violence. And when you do, the temptation will be to withdraw. And that's okay, because Jesus does too. But as you withdraw, may you ask yourself, to whom do you belong? Do you belong to simply a single family, or a single place, or a single political party? Or do you belong to the one who has pledged his life to make us whole by healing every division in Christ's body? May we leave behind the nets that bind us to a single part and follow the Christ who calls us to bind each other in networks of love until all are made whole.